CJSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you.
Good morning, this is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. Today, our treat is going to be listening to the accomplishments of women crime writers. You haven't heard that much about women crime writers, but our guests are going to let you know how that stands, what a marvelous milestone it is for the awards that they've received recently, and the things that are going to continue to unfold in Vancouver as a city very dedicated to the arts and very dedicated to writers. I love to ask writers about their three P's, as you know, their purpose, their project, and their passion. So without further ado, I'm going to have our guest introduce themselves to you. Good morning, Frances.
Good morning.
I was just saying, in a city that is so dedicated and excited about literary works, it seems like the event that you were at last night is ushering in the season of programs for writers, workshops for the public. Since you are the first to arrive, tell our guests, our listeners, a little about yourself and the awards you just received and why there is so much excitement about women crime writers.
I can be very happy to introduce myself. Yeah, Frances Peck. And I've actually been a writer my whole life, including for pay. I've been a writer and an editor of other people's writing. But I have to say that most of that writing, in fact, all of it that I did through my career for pay, was not under my own name. It was ghostwriting for clients and authors and so on. So I emerged under my own name with my first novel in 2022, a novel called The Broken Places. And the premise of that one is the big earthquake finally hits Vancouver. It's about a bunch of characters thrown together. And then my current book, my latest book, and the one that we were talking about during last night's panel is Uncontrolled Flight. And that's about the death of a firefighting pilot in the interior of BC and the investigation into what caused the crash and his death. So it's a little bit about me. Our panel last night, which was attended or hosted by me and also Lisa Brito, who'll be joining us soon, and Robin Yateman, a third author who unfortunately can't make it this morning. She has a day job, as we all do. But we were talking last night about a kind of interesting topic, Charlotte. It was about basically being on the edge of different genres. You know, our right. books, thrillers, mysteries, literary fiction, romance, you know, what are they? They blend in elements of all those things.
And so is there a growing awareness among the reading public of this crossover of genres? Or how do you think people interpret that? And the bookstores and libraries that are set up that say cooking, history, etc.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, you kind of nailed it. Like, the bookstores do tend to have those different categories, don't they, labeled in their store, so that somebody walks into a bookstore or a library. Well, actually, libraries less so, I have to say. Let's talk about bookstores for a second. You know, you walk into a bookstore and you want, let's say, a science fiction book. Most bookstores do have a science fiction section, and they often mix it with fantasy. Or you walk in and you want a mystery, you know, a whodunit or something like that. There's often a mystery section. And you can see why. Like, it is helpful to readers who are looking for a particular kind of read to be able to go directly to those shelves and find the kind of thing that they want. But the fact is that a lot of fiction out there, including our fiction, it doesn't neatly fit into one of those categories. And we, you know, you asked, is there a growing awareness with the reading public? I would tend to say, no, not really. I don't know that readers pay a lot of attention to genre and where a book fits. Other than there are some, as I say, who just always want a mystery, or they always want a romance, or they always want a sci-fi. Where there's a lot of attention to genre is among writers and in the whole publishing machine, basically, if I can put it that way. Because publishers, publicists, book marketers, etc., they need to know where to put your book.
Where does it go? Right. What kind of sign do we put over it?
Exactly. And, you know, for them, it's a business decision, right? If, you know, is this book a thriller? Well, if so, we're going to market it like a thriller. We're going to try to tap into the audience for thrillers. We're going to give it a cover that makes it look like a thriller, et cetera, et cetera. It just, I think maybe streamlines their process a little bit.
Mentoring younger people, well, I'm an old person that needs some mentors, but in mentoring, how do you work with helping young writers or new writers avoid the fear that they have about crossing genres, or where it's been so much put into their head in an English class or something? This has to be whatever, if it's fiction, or this has to be love. How do you see the role of a mentor in helping new writers not feel guilty about splitting or mixing genres?
Yeah, good question. I mean, it was interesting. You know, when the three of us sat down last night to talk about this, one of the questions that came up was, when you, the author, sat down to write your novel, were you conscious of genre? Did you sit down and think, I want to write a romance, or I want to write a satire, or I want to write a thriller, you know, whatever the case may be? And our answers across the board were, no, we didn't think about genre. We just sat down to write the book that was in us that needed to come out. And the questions about what genre does it fit into came up much later, you know, after the book was written. And if I am dealing with younger writers or emerging writers, of course, emerging writers aren't always young. Lots right. of people like me, you know, I was already in my 50s when I published my first novel. So, but somebody who's on the cusp of publishing, or maybe they've just written a manuscript and they're wondering about where does it fit and so on. If they've already written the book, my advice to them would be to start thinking about genre, yes, because a publisher, well, an agent and or a publisher will always ask a writer for what are called comparables. They'll say, what are some comparable books in the world out there, ideally that are selling well, that are like your book? Mm-hmm. And the minute they ask that question, now you're in a corner, aren't you? Because now you've got to think, okay, so what books are kind of like my book? And you instantly start looking on the shelves out there to see what matches. And you do inevitably have to think about genre then. However, if a writer is at an earlier stage where they're still writing, you know, they don't have a finished manuscript yet, my advice is always just follow the story. You know, write the story that is most authentic to you, that needs to be told. You know, follow your art, really. And don't be thinking about questions of genre at that early stage. Now, I have to jump in and add one thing, and that is that there certainly are writers out there who are writing in a very specific genre. I mean, let's think about, you know, writers who write romance novels, or who are writing a science fiction novel, or are writing a whodunit mystery. They can tell you from the get-go, hey, this is my genre. I'm going to write a book that fits that genre because this is the genre I'm comfortable in, that I love, where my audience is, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't want to forget those folks who, you know, really have a niche carved out for themselves. But the rest of us who are, you know, like a bunch of popcorn in a bowl, sort of like we're just, you know, we have all elements of all kinds of different genres in our books. I don't think we should be thinking too much about it during the creation stage. I mean, do you, if you don't mind a question back, when you read a book, are you really conscious of the genre that the book is in? Like, do you go looking for that?
Well, sometimes when I'm looking for a book, I have a particular feeling. So I might be feeling for a book that feels has spirituality, or I might be feeling like for a movie, I really need to see something funny. I need to read something funny. So I might look. But other times, you know, I've spent hours just browsing around bookstores for the cover or something that I've read, like reading that, you know, there were going to be three authors. There are a few places having panels. Well, then I'm curious because I want to see, you know, what their product is. I want to hear their passion for it. Then I get excited because the passion or excitement that an author has about their work makes me think, oh, that might be good. So I don't go in just, I mean, when I was in school, go in just to buy nutrition or history books. But now I'm, show me something.
Yeah.
But I did spend one day, there was something I was looking for and I could not find. They couldn't tell me what category to look in because it was one of those things that I think crossed genres and they were not very helpful. And the little signs, you know, they said, well, it might be in religion, it might be in history, or it might be in whatever.
Charlotte, from what you said, I was going to throw in there something that might interest you. At Iron Dog Books in East Van, where our event was held last evening, they have a category that I don't think I've ever seen in a bookstore before. They have a section of their shelves labeled feel-good books.
Ah.
And I was thinking, you know what you said, I get in that frame of mind sometimes because I do tend to read a lot of serious fiction and sometimes it's dark and tragic and frankly, it can be kind of depressing. And I'll get to a point where I think, I just want to read something that's going to make me feel good, that'll make me laugh or bring me joy. And I loved that they had that as a category.
Yes, I mean, that's right, because so much is telling people about personal care, feel good about yourself. So typically that would have gone maybe in medicine or it might have gone in psychology rather than feel good book.
Yeah, and I think some of the books they have in that category are humorous books or maybe romantic comedies, that kind of thing, like those sorts of stories, a little on the lighter side.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, have they created I know there's a movie genre called rom-com, but is there a book genre called rom-com?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely there is.
Let's stop a second and say good morning, Lisa. Welcome.
Good morning. Nice to meet you.
Yes, we were just talking about this thing of genre and the difference in writing the book that's speaking to you and mm-hmm. writing a book to fit a genre. So maybe you could introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little about you.
Yeah, so I'm Lisa Brito. I'm a debut author. My debut novel is Adrift, which is kind of a suspenseful mystery set in the near future about a woman who wakes up on a sailboat in Haida Gwaii with no memory of who she is or how she got there. And it follows her on her journey as she tries to unpack what happened and kind of how you exist in the world without any memories of who you are.
That sounds interesting. I keep having dreams about Haida Gwaii.
It's a magical place.
To me. What does your, you were talking also about genres, and what advice do you give someone who's starting off regarding the existing genres?
Yeah, it's tricky. When I wrote Adrift, I definitely wasn't thinking about that. There was a story that I wanted to tell, and I was kind of following it where it took me, and it was set in the near future, so a bit of speculative kind of sci-fi, but really with a mystery at its core, so a bit of mystery and suspense. And it wasn't until I started on the publishing journey that suddenly this question of genre and how to categorize it came up. And so, I think there's a couple paths you can go. One is just to tell the story that's drawing at you that you're really passionate about and then worry about the rest later, or to study the genre categorizations at the outset and know what they are, not necessarily to fit into a box, but just to have that awareness, which can either smooth your path later or just so you know what you're navigating as you go. It was a bit of a learning journey for me after the fact. Which maybe it would have been helpful to have that knowledge just about kind of the standards for various genre categories, because some are quite specific.
Well, Lisa, you and Francis are on the same point about that. And I think listeners would be happy to know, because people sometimes get discouraged by their high school or college English teacher who says, you have to do this, you have to stay within these boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so I think hearing people who have published say, no, write what's in your heart, write the story that's talking to you.
Yeah. I think you have to have fun with what you're doing and find the joy and the enjoyment. And if you don't, then why are you doing it? Yeah, it's a struggle. Yeah. So find a path where you can enjoy it. And if fitting into a, you know, a box or a template doesn't do that, I think you can be really creative within, you know, the standard confines of a genre. Like mystery genre is one where they have quite specific expectations for kind of how you kind of move through the story. And then it's about finding the creativity within that template, which can be a fun exercise as well. So there's joy to be had in multiple paths. You just got to find the one that works for you, right?
Yeah. The other thing is too, I think that if a writer sits down to write a book and it's, if they're trying too hard to fit themselves into a genre where maybe it's not a comfortable fit, the reader is going to sense that too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to show in the manuscript that their voice is going to sound inauthentic, or the story might seem forced, or the characters might seem, you know, molded to fit the story. And readers are very intuitive and perceptive, and they know when things are false in a story. Mm-hmm. And they don't like that. You know, readers are always, whatever they're reading, they're craving something authentic, something that feels authentic and true. And the writers out there who intentionally write in a genre like sci-fi or mystery or romance and who are really good at it, it's because they feel a call toward that genre and they can be their authentic, they can speak their authentic voices through that genre.
Speaking of authentic voices, a question I like to ask people, I'll ask each of you individually, what do you see as your purpose in life? What would be your answer to, what's your purpose?
Wow. I feel like I want to have maybe about 12 sessions of therapy or something before I could answer that question, Charlotte. That's a big one. You know, I personally don't think a lot about my purpose in life. I don't think. I think about things like, I guess when I'm writing, and I think that's what you're probably referring to mostly, when I'm writing, I feel like I have two purposes. So one purpose is to satisfy something artistic within myself. And I will confess to a certain amount of selfishness when I think any writer feels this. I mean, a writer's job is the most boring thing you can imagine. Like, that's why nobody films a writer at work, because you're just going to see a person sitting in front of a screen or possibly having a long walk and daydreaming. You know, that's when all the writing takes place. So if you're going to do that, if you're going to live a life where it's just you and the page a lot of the time, you've got to be doing it to satisfy something inside yourself. So that's the first thing. You know, I guess I have an imagination or a sense of creativity or some artistic side that needs to be expressed. But then I find once I've written and I'm working on the piece, like I'm revising it, which you have to do with a reader in mind. Like the minute you go back to try to make it a better book, you're thinking about your readers. At that point, I don't think this is my purpose, but I am always extremely mindful of empathy. And thus far, everything I've written, I've tried to enter into the lives and heads of characters who are very different from me, although there are always some similarities. But I try to think, what makes them tick? Why are they the way they are? Why do they behave the way they do? Why are they that way? The psychology of people fascinates me. And I think the more that we all can explore that, what's going on inside the heads of our fellow humans, the greater are our chances of trying to understand the humans, especially those who are different from us, and feeling that we are all connected. I mean, that I think that notion of empathy is a pretty strong one for me.
I think that's very important for people who are writing or thinking about writing, that you have to spend some time getting into the head of the character, not just the person that's the main character, but how do the neighbors or work co-workers, how do other people fit and how do they think? Now, in doing that, have you taken any particular psychology courses, or is that just something intuitively that comes from you, the need to get inside the heads of your characters?
Well, my background, my education is all in English literature, but when you are raised on a steady diet of writing, you do read about so many different people and characters that I do think you tap into their psychology a little bit. I interviewed an awful lot of people when I was a for-pay writer. You know, writing freelance gigs, you often end up interviewing people a lot. And I had there are other aspects of my career. I was an investigator for a time of complaints of harassment in the workplace, which I got into as a writer, but ended up being trained up as an investigator. And you end up having to do a lot of layperson psychology when you're doing that kind of a job, you know, kind of parsing out why did someone do what they did and whatnot. So I think that my interest is probably more, you know, from those streams than anything.
So Lisa, what do you see? Do you see yourself as having a particular purpose? You or your work?
Yeah, I had time. Well, Francis was answering to think about that big question. I feel like my overarching answer is kind of a desire to leave the world better than I found it or than I entered into it, and finding ways to do that. And so in my professional life, I'm lucky that I get to work in the area of sustainability. So I come to work every day and kind of get a chance to feel like I have that chance to try and make improvements, working, you know, on climate change policy. So that's really satisfying. And it turned out that that kind of bled into my fiction as well, that like with Adrift, there's a layer of kind of, it takes place against this backdrop of climate change. And it's not about that. It's more that that's kind of the environment in which it takes place, because it's set in the near future. And I wanted to try and engage people in conversations about climate change without it being like it is in my professional world, where it's overwhelming and people often get paralyzed with grief and just that sense of overwhelm. I wanted to put it into, like, kind of embed it into a vehicle of entertainment so that people could have fun and enjoy themselves in the reading process, like they do with, you know, a novel, but still come away with some, hopefully some thoughts or new ideas about the issues that we're grappling with. And then maybe that translates into real life conversations. I've had some great book club conversations that veer into the realm of like actual climate change actions, which is exactly what I had hoped for, that it would be an entertaining process, an entertaining read. And then you would meet with your friends and have conversations about ideas that came up as just part of the novel. So yeah, I think that idea of how can we spark conversations, and part of it, there's an element in Adrift that's about climate migration, this question of people who are forced to leave where they live because of climate change impacts. And, you know, if how's Canada going to respond to that if people want to relocate to Canada because it's maybe not as impacted as immediately? And are we having those conversations, or are we going to wait until it's a crisis and then respond in like a not humane way? And so that idea of how can we empathize with people and create that, yeah, that preparatory conversation before it's a crisis on our doorstep and we just have a really knee-jerk reaction that tends to be cruel.
Yeah, I'm sure as both of you know, the crisis now going through the Caribbean with not just one island, but multiple islands being wiped out, it brings to a head that we need to have decent conversations about climate control. I think writers speaking to people, or that, you know, kind of messages within both of your books, those are things that can help before the lion is at the door. But now, what role do you think writers, people in the literary arts will have in helping with both the emotional as well as the business talks that were going to need to be done immediately with so much devastation?
I think it's huge for all arts to reflect back the crises that are happening in our lifetime and the ones that are coming, right? It's to make sure that we're confronting the reality that's ahead of us and trying to prepare people for it and to prepare for the possible futures, to imagine out what are the different scenarios that are coming if we make the following choices. So I think fiction is a great opportunity, but all arts, and it's interesting in that there's a fantastic author, Amitav Ghosh, who wrote The Great Derangement, and he talks about how, this is a few years ago now, but he talks about how the arts world, literature in particular, hadn't been grappling with climate change in fiction. And anyone who did got kind of shelved over in the science fiction genre. And it was immediately discounted as not serious literature because it was set in the future and talking about extreme weather events. And somehow that was immediately science fiction. And he was really critiquing that and the need for the literary arts to actually grapple with this reality that's in front of us now. And it was a failure of the arts to shy away from it. And I think that's shifted. I think there are more literary arts that are delving into climate. But yeah, my sense is that it's one tool among many to make sure these ideas that are raised in the public consciousness so that they can engage in the real world by talking to their politicians and pressuring for the actions that we need to take and making sure we're setting ourselves on a better course. We're helping care for the communities that are impacted, especially because Canada is responsible for a lot of the emissions, but the impacts are being felt by other countries like the Caribbean and who are feeling more and more extreme weather events and hurricanes, right? So kind of unpacking what our responsibility is and where we can help for the communities, even external to Canada, that are impacted.
Oh, Francis, what do you think about this? Now it brings to a head all of these questions or debates about climate change or the effects or saying things that were going to be 5 years out that are right now devastating lives. What role or how do you see the role or skills of a writer in dealing with this crisis?
Well, I certainly agree with Lisa. You know, fiction in particular, which is what both of us write, has always been in some ways a better vehicle for conveying ideas to people than other forms of writing, because when we're reading story, we're absorbed in what we're reading in a different way from when we're just reading information. You know, when we're reading for informational purposes, most of us anyway skim. You know, we read quickly. We often read with, you know, inside a kind of echo chamber. We're looking for the ideas that mirror the ideas and opinions that we already hold. And when we encounter challenging ideas and opinions, we're more likely to discount them or refute them mentally. When we encounter story, though, and there's all this brain science now that shows how readers respond to story, that their brains fire in a way, in such a way as if they were actually doing the actions that they're reading about in the story. That's how much story engages us as readers. And if we can fall into a story and enter the worlds and minds of the characters in the story who are going through, let's say, a climate change event or emergency or situation or something, we as readers are more likely to experience the thoughts, feelings, decisions of those characters than if we were just reading about this in an informational way. And, you know, I guess it does go back a little bit to what I was saying about empathy. A lot of writers make a pretty explicit connection between what they write, if they're writing fiction, and the notion of empathy, because story has that power. It has that power to bring readers inside a world. And while they're in that world, they can be experiencing life through the eyes and through the minds of the characters in the story. So story has a lot of power to help people explore their thoughts and maybe expand their thoughts, you know, and maybe entertain some ideas that are different to them. You know, one thing I will say, my novel, unlike Lisa's, it doesn't deal with climate change. However, there is wildfire as a background to my novel. You know, it's about the crash of a firefighting pilot. And one of the main characters in the book is an aerial firefighter. That's what he does for a living. And there's certainly description of wildfire in the book. But interestingly, I drafted this novel way back in 2012, 2013, so over a decade ago now. And at the time, the most devastating wildfire that we in British Columbia